I'm Brian McCreath with Stephen Isserlis at the Gardner Museum. Stephen, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk with me.
Well, it's a pleasure so far.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll see.
Well, your new recording of Bach Gamba Sonatas is not just about Bach, it's also about Scarlatti and Handel. You put these three composers together because they're all born in the same year, and they have such different characters. So I wondered whether there were certain things that you and Richard Egar, your collaborator on this project, whether there were certain things you did during the recording sessions to sort of put yourself in the frame of mind for Bach and for Scarlatti and for Handel.
No, you don't have to. You just play a few notes and you're in the frame of mind. I mean, they do it for you. It's just such different music.
Yeah.
And of course, you can tell the two opera composers and the sort of the ultimately religious composer. I mean, I think religion sort of lies beneath all of Bach's works, whether secular or sacred. And it's completely different. Bach, and yet, of course, on the surface, I suppose they sound fairly similar. Well, partly because you have a cello and a harpsichord on the same disc playing, but the more you get to know them, the more striking the differences are. And I like the similarities between Handel and Scarlatti, that sort of bel canto style of the slow movements.
It's such a striking part of the recording when you move from that first Bach Gamba Sonata to the Scarlatti. I mean, it almost couldn't feel more different.
It's true.
Yeah.
Given that, you know, so of course, we had a continuo cello, very beautifully played by Robin Michael, for the Scarlatti and the Handel, because they are sonatas with continuo, whereas the Bach is very much three equal parts, the cello or gamba and the harpsichord, right and left hands.
And you mentioned Bach's other music. How much does his other music, whether it's cantatas or other vocal works or other instrumental works, how much does that inform sort of your way of processing and then ultimately playing Bach's music?
Maybe it should more. I mean, I think I've actually trying to persuade somebody to do a big study, which as far as I know has never been done, of the relation between the Bach vocal works and the cello suites. Because, I mean, for instance, the prelude, the famous prelude of the first cello suite, very similar writing crops up in a cantata which is talking about the ship of life, sort of entering the sea of life. And that really ties in so well. And when the Gamba Sonata, as I mentioned in the sleeve note, the end of the third movement of the first sonata. Very much reminds me of the Gamba aria, the end of it, in St. John Passion, where it says, "It is finished." It's a very similar phrase. So, yeah, I'm sure there are many more. I wish I were more knowledgeable about the cantatas particularly and all the other Bach vocal works, because I'm sure there are a lot of connections. But just the spirit, I mean, when I play the fifth suite for cello, for instance, I've often listened to bits of the St. Matthew Passion, because it's definitely, it shares DNA, as Robert Levin would put it.
Yes, absolutely. The Gamba Sonatas, as you point out in your notes, aren't nearly as, I don't know if well-known is the right word. They're not nearly as in front of us, I guess the right word is to say, as the cello suites.
Yes.
or the violin partitas and sonatas. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think partly the six cello suites is absolutely a unit, even if he wrote it in two two sessions, which I think is possible. At two separate times, we just don't know. Whereas the Gamba Sonatas are three completely different pieces. They make a wonderful set of three, but they're not siblings, really, except that the Gamba Sonatas by Bach, but they're, at least they're very different. If the sixth suite's really one journey from the first suite, the beginning of the first suite to the end of the sixth suite, you can really think of it as a journey. And that's not the case with the Gamba Sonatas. They stand on their own. And the first one, of course, is the beautiful pastoral G major sonata. And the second one is this joyous virtuoso piece. And the third is, I just played it with the great Hungarian pianist and teacher, Ferenc Radosz. And he said something which is very true, that the third sonata is more archaic than the other two, and it's also more modern somehow. And people have thought it was originally an orchestral work. They thought it was the seventh Brandenburg. I don't agree with that, but there is something of that in it. But it's really almost experimental, and yet sort of in a very sort of old Italian concerto style as well.
That is one of the things that Bach does in his cantatas, though. He draws on some kind of ancient form and then layers over it other things that are completely unexpected.
So
it's not
experiments
so
with it.
Within it. Yeah. I'm assuming you've known Richard Egar for a long time.
Yeah, not that long. But it's funny, we haven't spent that much time together, except that we've come together to rehearse very little and then play together. And it just worked immediately. But we haven't spent that much time together. But then we found ourselves in Hobart, Australia, earlier this year. I got off the plane at Hobart. And there was his name. I thought, he must be here rehearsing. So we had a great time. And then we discovered we're both in Boston next weekend, which is great.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But when did you decide to put together this recording?
I think after our first concert together.
Yeah.
And at that point, he couldn't for contractual reasons. So when he became free to do so, we did it as soon as we could get our schedules to work. And we did one concert before and then just did it. And it's one of the most enjoyable recording sessions I've ever had, because it's just such a good atmosphere in the studio. We were just having such fun. And we played at the Wigmore Hall in London just last weekend. And I say, some of the ornaments that suddenly come out, I had to burst out laughing at one point. At an appropriate place, I should say.
I was hoping it would be appropriate, of course. So you mentioned the G minor sonata, and I love one of the quotes that you have in your notes, beautifully written notes by you, not like some CDs where someone else writes the notes.
All my own sleeve notes.
You talk about it as clothing transformative ideas in ostensibly traditional forms.
Yeah. That was rather good. I must have worked on that sentence.
Well done, yeah. But I guess that's what is fascinating about Bach is the character of like you were saying before, the stretching boundaries and finding new things that nobody thought were there, anchored within something else.
The most fascinating thing about Bach is that he was God. He's just the God of music. I mean, how he just brings such perfection, I don't know, to everything he touches. Well, it's a bit like Mozart. Somebody asked Mozart how he managed to write such perfect music, and he's just shrugged, said, "I don't know any other way to write." And it's like that with Bach. I mean, what Bach accomplished in a day, because composing was only a small part of what he had to do. If you read what he had to do, I mean, including tuning all the instruments of his orchestra before rehearsals and things like that, it's just mind-boggling. But yes, he definitely... He was thought of as old-fashioned in his day. It's most peculiar. And it's nice, actually, that his son, C.P.E. Bach, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, there's nothing in common between the two, really. And he's the ultimate modern composer for his time, and he still sounds modern. But it's nice that he's becoming more famous now, because he's extraordinary. I mean, Bach is God, but C.P.E. Bach is definitely his son.
Yeah. So one of the marks of Bach's genius, I always believe, is that no matter what setting his music ends up in, whatever instruments, the qualities remain, the essence of it remains.
That's true.
And so it brings to question the sort of balance that you've struck in this recording between using your modern cello with harpsichord, and where you and Richard decided on different directions with strictly historically informed performance versus simply what you want to play?
Well, what we want to play should come from the music. Therefore, it shouldn't disagree with historical information. I mean, you don't want to... You can read all the books you like. It won't teach you what these pieces mean. And I do like to read these books. In fact, I especially like it secondhand. I like reading things like Clive Brown's books, where he just gives all sort of all these very different points of view from those times about things. And they all contradict each other, which gives you a certain lot of freedom. I don't think you should ever go against your instincts. But hopefully, as I say, your instincts come from the music. So therefore, they should agree with what is historically correct. I mean, I usually play gut strings anyway, so that's a start. Not to be sort of historically authentic, but to be emotionally authentic, because I think there's a very different way of playing on gut, which for me, I feel uncomfortable trying to play gut on steel strings. I've occasionally had to try a movement or so. And it's such a different sound world, and the way you have to play seems so much more sort of, you have to do much more with steel strings. And with gut strings, you can just let the music speak for itself more. And I remember one point in the, I can't quote exactly what Richard said, but I said at one point in the session, I wanted to start a trill on the main note rather than the upper. I said, what do I say if people tell me that's wrong? And he said, tell them to F off. Which I thought was a good attitude.
which cello did you use?
I used the Strad, which I'm also using here in Boston now, the Marquis de Couperin from 1726. Yeah. I mean, I do have to play very softly, which is nice for me, because often, you know, I also play Dvorak concerto on it, and then I have to remember not to play too softly when I play with either Richard Eager or Robert Levin, as I'm doing here in Boston with forte piano. I have to remember not to play too loudly. And that's nice, because I like just touching the instrument, letting it speak for itself.
Did your choice of instrument and doing these on a cello rather than a gamba affect which harpsichord Richard?
I think he had to use a strong one, but he probably would have anyway.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have done them all. I don't play the gamba, and mostly when cellists play the gamba, they usually make fools of themselves. I mean, it's a different art.
Let me ask you one more question. I know you have to get to rehearsal, but I'm so curious that you included in this set of sonatas, you've included this one chorale prelude.
Yes, that wasn't meant to happen. I mean, this piece is just, it really is music from God. I say again, this Ich rufe zu dir, Herr Jesu Christ. I just can't imagine more beautiful music than this. And it was just when Richard and I had given a concert a few days before the recording sessions, I said, we wondered what encore to do. And I said, well, maybe we could play Ich rufe zu dir, this beautiful chorale prelude. But I'm just, you know, it's an organ piece. I think the top part goes very nicely on there, goes beautifully on the cello, but I'm not sure you can play the accompaniment, or not the accompaniment, the other two lines, on the harpsichord. And he used one of his colourful expressions and told me to bring it along. And I forgot to bring it along to the concert, so we didn't have an encore. But I brought it along to the recording session. I said, we'd finished. I said, oh, I brought this along. He said, oh, let's try it. And we tried it. And he played it so beautifully on the harpsichord. It sounded so convincing. The producer was listening, Andrew Keener. He said, OK, let's record it. So he went off and photocopied it, and we recorded it, just really on the spur of the moment. But it is, I mean, what music. How can music be more beautiful than that? It's miraculous.
Stephen Ursulis, I so appreciate your time today. Thank you for talking with
me. Pleasure. Thank you.